E-12 Education Finance Committee will come to order. Good morning, everyone, and welcome. The legislation, we have three pieces of legislation this morning, and we're going to start out with Senator Tomasoni's, and this is a proposal that Senator Tomasoni has had for several years. I'm not sure exactly, many years. And I'm not sure exactly.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Saxhug?
Senator Tomasoni shared with me that since he began this, he's gained 20 pounds.
Oh, my gosh. Might have to have him get up and do some jumping jacks. And welcome, Senator Tomasoni.
And we want this thing on?
I'm not sure, is that projector? Can we just maybe set it aside? Okay, good.
Well,
so Senate File 382, Senator Tomasoni.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members, and thank you for hearing this again. Mr. Chairman and members, Senate File 382 is the physical education standards bill that we've been working on for a number of years, as you mentioned earlier. Little by little, we've been getting different things into the statute about it, and there's been, a huge problem has been identified over the years in regards to the childhood obesity epidemics. So I'd like to briefly describe the bill and the amendment I'd like to have offered, and then hand it over to the people here who are experts on this and describe the bill to you. We've been working on this issue for about 5 years, and I believe that Minnesota's children need to learn the lifelong skills that are offered through quality physical education. It's time that Minnesota makes physical education a priority, and here's just a couple of statistics that demonstrate the urgency of the problem. Since 1980, the percentage of young people who are overweight has tripled, and children who are overweight are 80% more likely to be overweight as adults. As we all know, obesity turns into a problem that ends up in our hospitals and our clinics also in the long run, and ends up costing society a lot of money. Importantly, this discussion about physical education has been the focal point in the healthcare reform discussion. An agreement exists between the governor's task force and the Healthcare Access Commission that statewide standards should be implemented. The governor's healthcare transformation task force concluded standards for physical activity in schools should be enacted to help reduce the percentage of children who are overweight and obese, and the Healthcare Access Commission also concluded that statewide curriculum standards for health, nutrition, and physical education and graduation requirements in this area should be implemented. Minnesota is currently one of only three states without a statewide standard, and as a result, an increasing number of school districts are reducing and eliminating the time that students spend in health and physical education. The Minnesota Department of Education does not track the level of health and physical education offered in the school districts, because I think we actually say in statute that they don't have to. And at the same time, we're experiencing a costly obesity epidemic, and the testifiers will be providing you more information on the cost and the failure to address the issue. And I might also mention that physical education not only has something to do with obesity, but it has a lot to do with actually the level of learning in our schools, because it's been proven over and over again that if you're physically active, you actually do better in school also. And so it has a double impact, which is good for kids in a couple of ways. What the bill does is it requires the Department of Education to create statewide standards for health and physical education. It reinstates a graduation requirement of 1/2 credit, and what we're going to do with an amendment is just take out the half credit for health and just have a half credit for physical education in order to graduate from Minnesota high schools. It requires the federally mandated school wellness plans to be posted on the Minnesota Department of Education website, and appropriates money to grants to assist the schools in implementing the wellness policies. The delete all amendment that we have. Do you have a delete all amendment, Mr. Chairman, somewhere?
Yes, we do. I believe it's the A1 amendment. Members, I believe, have that. And Senator Uyghur moves that amendment. Okay, we don't have a quorum, so we'll wait until we get a quorum.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, what the amendment basically does is instead of having health and physical education required in the standards, it just has physical education. And so it's only a half credit instead of a whole credit. And, you know, Mr. Chairman, maybe with that, I'll just, while we're waiting for people to show up, I'll have my witnesses go ahead and testify.
Okay, thank you. One little caveat is that we do have a fiscal note for the original bill. And if members would turn to page 3 of that fiscal note, as when we get a quorum to adopt the amendment, there's a little box about the middle of the page, and in that box it's the cost summary. So you can actually look at what's being taken out and what the cost is that remains. So we'll adopt that amendment quick as we get a quorum. Who wants to go next?
Hi, Mr. Chair, my name is Rachel Callanay, and I'm the Senior Advocacy Director with the American Heart Association. And I just want to
excuse me, could you just pull the microphone just a little bit closer so it magnifies? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say a couple of quick words and then really turn it over to the experts in this field to provide their testimony. We did ask Ellie Zelke from Allina to be here today. But we were asked to kind of scale back our testimony. So she wasn't here, but she submitted written testimony. And I just want to highlight a couple of things from her written testimony. One is that she was a co-chair of the Governor's Childhood Obesity Task Force that was convened in 2006. And they have a set of recommendations. And I just want to point out that the executive summary of those recommendations are in your packets. Among those recommendations, and there were 17 different recommendations that task force looked at, one, it has to do with this very issue to require statewide standards for physical education. So I just wanted to highlight that. Secondly, I wanted to highlight that she, in her testimony, talked about the recent Blue Cross Blue Shield Minnesota Department of Health study describing the escalating health costs due to the rise in obesity rates. And there are some dramatic numbers, though, and I know this is not a health care committee, but I think it is very important that this committee is aware that these costs are coming down the road, and we do need to address this issue very urgently. With that, I'm going to hand it over to John Sirard from the University of Minnesota.
Let the record reflect that we have a quorum and that Senator Uyghur, your motion on the A1 amendment, members, that's the I believe you have that, delete all amendment that's before you. Any questions? Do you have that amendment, Senator Roblin?
Mr. Chair, is this the same one that was just offered by Senator Uyghur?
Okay. Senator Uyghur moved that amendment. We didn't have a quorum to take action on it, so.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roblin.
I guess I'm a little confused. You're taking health out and putting physical education in?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Thomas Roblin.
Here's what the amendment does. It it instead of requiring the Department of Education to develop statewide standard for both health and physical education, it just requires to do it for physical education. It also, it extends the effective date for the physical education standard by 1 year from 2008 and 09 of the academic year to 09 and 10. And then it removes the school wellness grant program, which includes the $2 million appropriation for the program. So what we're doing is we're trying to there was one of the complaints about the bill in the past was that it took an elective away from students in high school. So basically speaking, what we're doing is we're scaling it back by a half of an elective. So instead of having 6 electives, now they have 6.5, and the school districts can continue to teach the health if they want to, but only the Phi Ed would be going into as a standard.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roland.
I guess in a lot of ways I consider the health portion almost more significant. In FIED, they won't be required to learn about nutrition, will they? Well, isn't it mostly physical activity? Will they be learning about what they should be eating and, you know, how to count calories or do any of that sort of thing that is really a major part of weight maintenance and healthy living? And so I'm kind of conflicted here about how we're addressing this, because if we really want to get to the obesity epidemic, it's about more than just keeping kids active. It's about teaching them lifestyles and eating habits that are really important.
Senator Rubley, I'm going to let somebody else address that, but I'm going to say this. I've been trying to do what you want to do for the last 5 years, and it hasn't been working, so we're trying something else.
Hey, give your name for the record. Oh, on the on Senator Wieger's motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. Hey, if you would like to continue with your...
Sure.
Give your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Sirard. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Minnesota. I'm in the Division of Community Epidemiology and Community Health in the School of Public Health there. I've been on the faculty for approximately 2.5 years, and I've been studying children's physical activity and obesity prevention for the last 11 years. And I just want to thank the committee for the opportunities to speak this morning in support of Senate File 382. And as you are aware, childhood obesity is a growing public health concern facing not only Minnesota's youth, but youth across the nation. Due to the increased prevalence of excess weight, a growing number of adolescents are now facing chronic disease conditions like type 2 diabetes that we typically don't see until adulthood. And particularly low-income and minority children are especially susceptible to being overweight or obese and the related health concerns. So the solution to this obesity problem, as my father tells me frequently, is obvious. You just eat less and exercise more. So that's pretty simple, but however, it gets very complicated and very difficult to actually implement in the real world, where you have a number of societal forces working against you and leading you towards a sedentary lifestyle. So those pressures come from the individual themselves, but also the family, the home environment, peers, the school environment, the community, and policy decisions. So today we're talking about a policy decision that's having its effect at the school level. So specifically, structured physical education classes provide an opportunity for physical activity that can help partially prevent or treat overweight and obesity. So most school-based physical education interventions, these are research studies, do observe increases in physical activity and increases in physical fitness. Now, findings with weight maintenance or weight reduction are less consistent. However, I think to me that just emphasizes the fact that obesity prevention is a multi-factor problem. And physical education is just one piece to that much larger puzzle. And I think in order to see really noticeable changes in childhood obesity prevalence rates, we need to attack the problem not just from school, but also at the community level and the home and the family level as well. Still, enjoyable, quality physical education programs increase activity and fitness and can have additional benefits by promoting behavioral skills that promote lifelong physical activity participation, improve confidence and self-esteem, and decrease depressive symptoms. Also importantly, as Senator Tomasoni mentioned, there is a strong and growing research literature indicating that increasing time spent in physical education actually either maintains or improves academic performance, despite curriculum time being taken away from other core classes like English and math. So in conclusion, I want to repeat my support for Senate File 382. And while I think this legislation is not going to eliminate the childhood obesity problem, it is one small step in the right direction towards quality physical education and healthy physical activity for all Minnesota children. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, and thank you for sharing your time with us. just want to ask, you mentioned that it's a multifaceted problem, and I believe it was in Senator Wieger's committee a couple nights ago. We were talking about the health of our children, and you know, these numbers that and I can't probably I'm going to massacre her name, but Ellie
Zelke,
okay, gives are pretty staggering. Just listen to this. It says that by 2020, which isn't that far away, the cost of treating an obese person will be 61% higher than a healthy weight person, and that 45% of all adults will be obese, almost half of our population. I mean, this is staggering, really. Is this the best way that we can address it, address the obese and along with the obesity, heart disease and type 2 diabetes, and I mean a host of other things come into play.
Right.
You know, this is one little part, but it, if you were to give us a recipe, what would it be?
Okay, Mr. Chair, I think this is one piece, as I said, and so school-based physical education is one piece. I've been involved in some research studies that actually try to change the whole school environment and make the school environment more conducive to physical activity by implementing faculty and staff wellness, physical activity and wellness programs to get the teachers to role model the behavior and also incorporate changes to the school lunch curriculum. As was pointed out, it's not just physical activity. I think diet is a huge component to this. Many of the weight loss or weight maintenance interventions that you see in adults, the best results are obtained when you combine diet and exercise together. Exercise or physical activity is really key, though, for the maintenance of weight loss after the initial weight loss. So physical activity is key. And then also I think it needs to not just be school-based, but also reach out to the families through primary care, also through community organizations or changes at the community level, policy decisions around transportation, community or neighborhood design, and the environment itself. So it's really a very complex issue. So yeah.
It's going to take a lot of help in turning this around. Senator Saltzman.
Right. Yes. Very important important topic, Mr. Chair, and I would just like to ask if in your research, I do know that some school districts in the state already have these standards as a local standard, and I know Stillwater does, and I believe Edina does. It would be really helpful, have you done research to be able to show us that those school districts have significant differences then in their in the health of their students?
No, I don't believe that research exists. Right now we're conducting a survey to look at what school districts are offering across the state as far as their local FIED requirements. But I don't believe in this state anyone's looked at FIED requirements and physical education. There is some research that I just was reading a couple days ago that mentions children wore pedometers for a week, and they looked at daily steps per day. It's a measure of physical activity. And during days when they had FIED, they were more active. They took more steps per day than when they did not have FIED. So there is evidence for that.
Senator Saltzman.
So just to confirm, then, this proposal, which has an impact on school districts, we're not even sure. I mean, we could be right now looking at school districts that do have both health and FIED to see if this is really effective or not. I mean, that would be something I think would be a very important study, is to look at, is this the approach we want to take? Because I would suggest that maybe a portfolio or something, because having just, I mean, I don't mean to say this just, but just a one-semester class, is that going to make really long-term lifestyle changes? And is that the kind of, I think, is there a way for us, and I spoke to the YMCA when they were here and said, what's your role in this, in looking at how do we engage kids to get them out into those things that you're going to do on a lifetime basis? So I just wanted to know, to see if you had any background on that. So.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, one of the issues regarding that is, measurement error in how we measure physical activity. And if you look at a study like that cross-sectionally, the association between the amount of PE and physical activity, chances are pretty slim that you're actually going to see a big difference, or just because of the way the study is conducted. And you really need to do a longitudinal or intervention to see that kind of effect.
So Mr. Chair, if I heard you right, we're not even sure that this would even have an impact then?
I think for the schools that don't have any requirement, I think it will have some impact. Whether we be able to measure it with the tools that we have right now, I'm not sure that we could get that. Because what happens is typically what you use is a one-week recall. So you ask people to recall the physical activity they did during the previous week. And that's notoriously weaker in children than in adults. And so people forget things, and it's just a recall error, but it's physical activity assessment is just plagued by that issue. So just
one short follow-up. What I think I was asking is if the overall health of the children in a school district that already have these requirements in place is better compared to school districts that don't. I guess what I'm looking at is that overall, is there a health impact? Do we see a significant difference in districts that now are offering or, you know, mandate these for their students? That's the information that I would like to see.
Okay, Chair, and I don't have that information for you, and I don't know that it exists in the literature right now. So.
Senator Bonhoeff?
Mr. Chair, I was wondering, given the statute does say now health and physical education for which locally developed academic standards apply, are we presuming that all of the school districts currently are having local standards at this point for both health and I know, for example, in Hopkins, where my kids go to school, health is a requirement, as is this, you know, physical education. Is that correct, that right now, legally, they have to have a local standard for health and PhyEd?
Senate Counsel.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, right now, all school districts have to have health and physical education, but it's a local standard versus a statewide standard. So each district could have a different requirements or different standards versus something uniform across the state.
So,
Senator Bonhoeff.
Mr. Chair, what this bill does is it brings some consistency and uniformity to the PhyEd portion of that standard, correct?
Senator Tomasoni?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's correct, Senator Bonhoeff. And in addition, we've we've been told that at least 80% of the school districts have been asking the Department of Education to help them develop these standards. So it's kind of like the local school districts would like some guidance, would actually like to have a statewide standard so that everybody is operating under the same conditions.
Mr. Chair, back to Senator Roebling's point, I would have been welcomed having the health part also as part of the state standard, because I know in my house, you know, the health curriculum that each one of my kids took changed their lives. Each one in a different way. They had to come up with projects where they changed their lifestyle. One of mine quit drinking pop. One of mine started Weight Watchers and lost a lot of weight. And so I'm convinced that in cooperation, the two of them are stronger than separate. And so I know we did approve that amendment taking it out, but I would just still raise for conversation the importance of having a statewide health and FIED standard together. I think that that's a stronger message than just doing one piece without the other.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Tomasoni,
Senator Bonhoff, and Senator Roebling, I've been trying to get that done for quite a while, and apparently there's a reason that it's not happening. So this is an attempt to have a half a loaf instead of a whole loaf, and try and have a statewide standard at least on FIED, and keep the local standard on the health requirement. If the wisdom of the committee says we should keep it in there, that's fine with me. But I think for the way to approach it this year might be to go with just the FIED standard and see how that works out and how school districts handle it and maybe actually get something into the statewide standard as far as FIED is concerned. There's no doubt about the fact that the way you eat and what you eat is extremely important when it comes to the obesity problem, and the exercise problem is another issue. And I think teaching kids healthy ways to exercise in school is probably a good way to at least send them off into Never Never Land when they get out of high school and at least have an idea of what they should be doing. So we're trying to approach this a little at a time right now, and I guess I've ratcheted back what I wanted to do earlier. So,
Senator Bonhoff?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I will go with the will of the committee also, but I just bring that up. And then lastly, right now, because of the budget cuts that so many districts are doing, we're cutting back on the extracurricular sports activities that kids can participate in, particularly in the middle schools. I know there's many districts where that's where they have chosen to make their cuts. They keep their varsity sports, but they have cut the middle school sports. And I think this is one of the most damaging things we can do when we look at childhood obesity, because if we don't get these kids in those middle school years when they're in the middle of their development doing this exercise, they're not going to participate as 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders because they're not good. And then we're really putting them in a path that is not in their best interest.
Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, Senator Salzman asked my question because I had heard the testifier say the same thing, that we had no idea if this really did any good in the schools that have it. So,
hey, Senator Terezre.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to respond to this. We look at some of the concerns that you have, Senator Salzman and Senator Weaver. We look at this issue very extensively in the healthcare community. And one thing that is problematic for us right now is that we don't have ways to measure. And that's one of the reasons we are trying to implement the BMI measure in healthcare. And that's why we don't know. But what we do know is that activity, there is a direct correlation between activity and weight, of course. And that children are not active. And we have children in this, we have an opportunity to offer this through the schools because children spend long periods of time in the schools and they are inactive. And then they go home and we have no control really over their activity. So we are hoping that through this process, we can encourage the schools to increase activity for children. With time and in our policy committee, I will be offering hopefully a response, something that will help us move in that direction, which is to collect the information and to ask the commissioners to work together in staggering this process and figuring out if we're making progress. What is happening, though, is that we cannot wait because we already know, we have evidence that children are gaining weight because mm-hmm. of inactivity. Mm-hmm. So I think that through that study that we will be reviewing, I think, this afternoon in your committee,
yes.
Senator Weaver, we will have a response to your concerns because we do need to figure out if this actually works. We believe very strongly that it will because activity does work. So the issue is, how do we do it? Are the districts that are already doing it, could they serve as a model that we could expand?
Senator Salzman, and then we need to move on with the testimony.
Yes, and I know, and I just wanted to point something out, Mr. Chair. I passed out to everyone a sample six-hour period day for two semesters, and this has been my daughter's schedule for the past 3 years. And in Stillwater, we do have a requirement for health and phy-ed, and with a six-period day, and if you're taking English, and you're going to take math, and you're going to take a social studies, you're going to take a science, and you're going to take a foreign language, which are all things that our college prep, you know, is really looking for. The University of Minnesota this year, you know, I've heard that kids who didn't take a fourth year of science or math probably didn't get in. And then she was in orchestra. And that was a commitment that we made as a family, and it's hard to take a year off from orchestra. So as we kept asking the school district, because they changed their schedule, you know, her ninth grade year, to this 2-6, where are we going to fit in health and phy-ed? And she was in the first class moving through, and they kept waiting and waiting, and they offered online options. So my daughter took health through Brigham Young University in Utah, and she started taking phy-ed online. And frankly, it got to the point where she said to me one day, Mom, she's so stressed out, she's taking a heavy load, and she's a three-sport athlete. She's in cross-country, she's in alpine skiing and track. So she's not sitting around after school. And she came home one day and she said, Mom, in order to do my online phy-ed, because I've got a year to do it, I can't go to cross country this week because I've got to do my online phy-ed. So I think in all this conversation to look at with a lot of our school districts, you know, the 6-2 schedule was not our district's choice. We used to have a 7-2, but we had to cut back. We couldn't offer a longer day because of funding. And in cutting back to a 6-2, we lost a lot of electives. We lost the opportunity to do this. And so we're talking about we want to put more science in. We want more math in. And my daughter's not taking a lot of electives here. It could be art. Maybe she wants to take art. And maybe, you know. So I guess I'd like to see some options in here for kids who are in after-school sports. And I know that's not instructional. But I am concerned of what we're going to ask of our kids and of our schools, and is one, and I totally understand the problem. And I responded to people last year when I wasn't real supportive of this particular. I said, can we work on a portfolio? Can we work on something that kids are, that we're dealing with this for three full years than just one semester class? And I would be very open to working with that and working with our health committee, working with our providers. Because one class, you know, my daughter, you know, she ended up dropping out of the online, and then I said at the school, I demanded that they had to do a credit by assessment, which is in statute. So that kind of, she's not a requirement now, but I just pose this as the logistics of this. What looks like a wonderful solution, I'm not sure really addresses the problem.
Senator Scogin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Salzman, I just need to ask, because what online phy-ed would entail, it sounds like something I could really get my arms around. Sitting in front of a screen,
well,
learning about.
There was documentation. Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Senator Salzman.
And Senator Scogin. But this is the option is being offered by a number of school districts that are in the same dilemma as Stillwater, that where there's, I think, Edina, I'm not going to speak for them, but I have heard from parents at Edina who have a 6-2 and their kids, and they have a strong music program as well, that they're looking for options because they can't fit it in. Well, it was hard, and that's why my daughter was sort of saying, wait. And it was, you know, there was physical activity. She had to document it. But those are the options that we need to. I'm just presenting this as how we.
Okay. Senator Bonhoff.
Mr. Chair and Senator Salzman, Senator Tomasoni, I might suggest an amendment that might read something like online 1.12, following physical education. At board discretion, students enrolled in one or more after-school sports may be exempted from the standard. Would the author consider that friendly?
You know, Mr. Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
You know, I was a three-sport athlete, and I did physical education in school and was accepted at Brown University and at Dartmouth and at Princeton. I'm just wondering if it's necessary to go that direction. We did physical education in school too. And I think that kids playing after school sports is probably a really good thing, but for purposes of this bill, I'll let the wisdom of the committee decide this, but I would rather not give the exception, because I think that doing physical activity during school hours is actually beneficial for kids, and that taking that hour off to actually go in and get some physical activity actually gives them a break. It actually clears their minds, and it actually gives them something else to think about other than just all the studies that they've been going through, and I actually think it's a good thing to keep it in the school.
Before we get back to your question, Senator Von Hoff,
Mr. Chairman,
we want to try to finish the testimony too. So,
Mr. Chair, Senator Tomasoni, I just would say that in today's environment, the kids have so many more standards that they are required to take, and sometimes it is the difference between being able to have orchestra and FIAD. And if you are in an after-school sport, it might be best for that student's well-rounded academic career to be in both music and sports. And so that's why I raise it. It really is different today.
Let's, let's finish our testimony here, and then we can get back into discussion. Can you give your name for the record, please?
Jody Roy.
Welcome, Jody, and please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. As I just mentioned, my name is Jody Roy, and I'm the coordinator for the BLEND project out of the Central Care Health Foundation, part of Central Care Health System in St. Cloud. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of Senate File 382. As you well know, childhood obesity is a growing concern in Minnesota that must be addressed. For the first time in 100 years, the next generation of young people, which includes my children, will have a shorter life expectancy than mine. As a mother of two small kids, this gravely concerns me, and as a public health advocate, it ignites me to do something about it. Here in Minnesota, children are engaging in less and less physical activity, both in school and at home. As you know, changes in Minnesota law no longer require that a student take health or physical education in order to graduate from high school. Most districts still require it of their students, but the time devoted to this portion of a childhood's education is increasingly becoming less and less. This is why our organization, BLEND, Better Living, Exercise, Nutrition Daily, is collaboratively working in coalition with numerous other community partners to address this rising epidemic. Through our partnerships, we've developed programming for child care centers and parents. We are piloting a program this fall with local elementary schools, including the creation of infrastructure through safe routes through school and promoting a community-wide walk to school day. We are hosting three large-scale community events focused on increasing family physical activity and good nutritional choices. Our medical committee, which is made up of all local competing health systems, is working on a protocol to record BMI for every child and adolescent to further discuss those percentiles with parents and offer intervention and treatment opportunities where necessary. Our local grocers and distributors are on board to address their commitment and share in the responsibility of reversing this current trend. Strengthening physical education in the schools through this piece of legislation is one essential piece to this community-wide puzzle. A recent study published in the International Journal of Behavioral, Nutrition, and Physical Activity states, an additional curricular emphasis on physical education may result in small absolute gains in GPA, and further studies strongly suggest a relative increase in performance per unit of academic teaching time. Further, the overwhelming majority of such programs have demonstrated an improvement in some measures of physical fitness. Recent research also echoed in the media suggests that such activity may have a positive impact on both memory and learning. For these reasons, I believe that requiring physical education in schools is a win-win for all. Our children will perform better both in and out of the classroom and be better equipped with knowledge, skills, behaviors, attitudes, and confidence needed to lead a healthy, active life. In conclusion, you can see that children of Minnesota need this bill to ensure a comprehensive approach to healthy living. I want to state my support again for Senate File 382. This legislation will ensure that my kids and other Minnesota children have the support needed to prevail over the fight against childhood obesity. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Roy. Please go ahead and give your name for the record. Yes.
Hi, I'm Sally Wiltsy Sertich, and I am an assistant professor at Bemidji State University. I teach PE and health, and I teach our PE majors who actually want to go out and teach. That's my life right now. Previous to that, I was a early childhood in the adapted PE realm through 12th grade physical educator in Thief River Falls. I am two here for the same reason all these people are, and I want to thank you for your time. And I, like Senator Tomasoni, have been fighting this thing for a long time, and I'm glad he's been on board with this, and we really needed that. I think you've been here, and maybe Senator Stumpf, you've been here too. What's happened is, you know, long story short, you, many of you maybe, and some of you not, took something away from the kids. And I'm here to ask you to give it back. And what that is the requirement for physical education. I agree with Senator Roebling that health is very important too. But I understand Senator Tomasoni's point that we need to move forward on this. The kids deserve to have a content standard piece. They need to have knowledge about how to be physically active and about why. So for all the reasons people have said this, we need the standard to be required. Now, it's not. And prior to the grad standards and those being tossed out and now No Child Left Behind, it's been lost. And I wanted to point out that it's not really lost, that things are really going on in your districts that are critical and point to the direction that local places really believe PE and health are important. The handout you have in your packet is titled Minnesota Health PE, PE and Health Grad Requirements. And I took one high school from each of your districts, and I looked at the graduation requirement. Now, this isn't for PE and health. Again, this isn't required, but all of you have it. All of you have, if you look at the PE credits, you all have more than one half of a credit. That's required through your local district. If you look at the health piece, all of you have at least one half of a credit that's required from a local level. Now, Senator Salzman had a issue or a point about how do we assess this. Local control requires that a district be on a five-year or a six-year curriculum review cycle. Within that cycle, there should be a built-in assessment piece that reflects and lines up with the standards. And I'm going to stop right now because it's a good segue here for Russ. This is Russ Johnson, and he's a student at Bemidji State University. He can tell you more, but he does have a standards piece he'd like to add to this.
Mr. Chair, respected senators, welcome. My name is Russ Johnson. I'm a physical education and health education major from Bemidji State University. I'm in my senior year, and I'm down here with one of my professors, Sally, to show our support for Senate File 382. One thing we talk about with the state standards are is in 2004, the state came up with state standards that are established for health education and physical education in schools, and they are tightly aligned with the National Alliance for Sport and Physical Education, or what we call NASPE, that help maintain and establish quality physical education programs for children to be participating in and for teachers to follow as guidelines to help establish those roles. Excuse me. One thing I'd like to say, and Mr. Chair, you asked a question earlier about a recipe for helping take down childhood obesity and things of that nature. I don't necessarily think there's a recipe to do that immediately, but helping get set up or mandating these guidelines for physical education, and we believe health education would be a big part of that. If you can teach students when they're young to be active learners, active people throughout their lifestyle, to make healthy choices in their life, it will help keep them healthier and throughout their life and maintain that healthy lifestyle, which will in turn help teach their children and possibly their grandchildren how to maintain that healthy lifestyle without having the chronic diseases that we have right now with our children.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Okay. We also any questions that we members might have? Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you from the Heart Association for your care and concern about these issues. And like you, I am concerned about obesity and the epidemic ahead of us. I'm curious, what do we know about physical education in the elementary grades? It seems to me that from elementary through middle school, those are the most formative years in terms of the habits of mind and the way children think about things. Can you tell me anything about what's going on in our schools?
Mr. Chair, I can answer that. Sure. Senator Rummel, elementary PE is we have required minutes for that. Now, who teaches that? Oftentimes it's a qualified physical education teacher. Although in Minnesota it's also fine to have an elementary classroom teacher teach that. And I know I teach those teachers, and I teach our PE teachers too. Here's the difference, and we do need to have a scope and sequence of K-12 or K through high school PE, early childhood actually. There's a difference between physical activity, which is a behavior. Some of you are physically active right now, and then physical education. Physical education teaches the standards. It teaches motor skills. It teaches strategies. It teaches physically active over a period of time. It teaches social responsibility, values for physical activity. We need to teach that in the early years, and you can't leave that for recess. It just doesn't work because it's not structured. We don't teach them how to be physically educated. The recess is a physical activity. That's a behavior. So, you know, and that kind of follows through with middle school, and yes, the sports are being cut, but it's more important we keep PE because that's where the standards are being met. All standards aren't being met in an extracurricular activity. In high school, same thing. If we are going to give credit or waive PE for a high school sport, varsity sport, that's a very narrow standard that you're hitting. We should be hitting all six standards that are set up by the NASPE national organization, and also the standards that we have in place now align really well with that. So we need to keep that. We're only addressing high school because we've been fighting this battle for a very long time. We need to start at the top.
Yes, please.
I just want to clarify, the state does not require minutes provided in elementary school for physical education, and that's not what our bill requires either. We are asking for standards to be adopted statewide, and so I just want to clarify that. And Senator Rommel, more directly to your point, what is happening currently in elementary schools, because the standards are locally driven, there's a wide range of the standards that are being taught in schools right now, and that's the issue that we're trying to get at here, is to create a basic foundation of physical education for kids.
Okay. I understand the distinction.
Senator Anderson? Oh, Senator Rowe?
No, I'm done.
Okay, Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. I wanted to comment on the elementary years as well, because I think it's so critically important as well. And I did a little survey of my children, which is usually how I get a lot of information. My third grader wrote a little chart for me of how much gym he has. And he said 2 weeks science, no gym, and then the next 4 weeks it switches off gym and creative writing. So I made him do the math, and he said every 6 weeks he has 10 days of gym. So that's about 10 out of 30 days in a yearly schedule. And he said, he wrote down, you need 1 hour of exercise every day. That's what his gym teacher told him. And he remembered that and took it to heart. And, of course, as Senator Roebling told me, and I always remind him, you can exercise when you get home from school, too. But I think for the elementary years, it's so critically important to allow children to be successful at learning, to have that exercise time. And the recess, you know, I have I've got a lot of concerns about recess, too, and I've talked to my district about this, about recess being used as the only form of discipline that teachers really have. They take away minutes of recess. And that's not the official policy, is they're not supposed to do that, but my teachers that my kids have, and they're wonderful teachers, I'm not blaming them, but they all do it. And if the kids are too loud in the lunchroom, they lose recess minutes. And it just is so counterproductive to children being able to succeed in school. And I see that especially with my little boys and with all little children. They got to get their sillies out of their system to be able to sit down and learn. And so I really would like to see this incorporated all the way from the beginning grades on up, that it's a regular part of an everyday education.
Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree, but also I forgot your name, but you were in early childhood, I believe you said, and that's where it also needs emphasis. And frankly, we're putting a great expectation on the school when the parents should be doing their job, first of all. And that has to be said. And those habits that are encouraged at home will be very difficult to overcome by the time the child's in elementary school if they have been raised in that type of a house. And so if the parents are doing a bad job, that needs to be reflected as well. The school can't do everything. And as we face $1 billion deficit and struggle with the cuts that are being made across the state and the need that is presented here, I step back and say we have to go first to, you know, the root problem at home. And if students, if young children are encouraged to eat whatever they want, and they do not exercise, that the television or something else is going to babysit, and shame on those parents. And as we look at early childhood, and you mentioned your expertise in that, and I'm very interested in the measurement on specific programs that you did that would show success, we need to look at, you know, the parental role expectation as well as early childhood program delivery. And so I'd like some comment, if I could, on the specific things you did in early childhood in your program.
Because I was adapted, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Wilty, we're going to have to continue on. We still have some more people to testify, but you please give a comment. I think Senator Wieger was asking.
Senator Wieger, yes, thank you. My role was early childhood special ed, and so the measurement piece that we used was the IEP, where we had goals and objectives, and so we measured progress that way. The parent piece is huge in early childhood and early grades, actually, and as much the schools need to include parents as partners in that education piece. Failure to do so results in what you talked about. We can try, and I think schools do try. The measurement for, see, we're not, we don't require early childhood physical education in a general sense. In a special ed sense, we do. So we pick up the kids when they're in kindergarten. And that's less minutes per week, too. But I don't know if I answered that question very well, but we're short on time, I understand.
Thank you. We have Ms. Schwab from the School Board Association.
Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Schwab, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and we'd like to comment on Senator Tom Mazzoni's bill. We appreciate the changes he's made in this bill this year, but we still have significant concerns going forward. And I want to really say it's not just about this bill. But about all the others we see out here, I'd like to remind you that we have outdoor education wanting to be a standard graduation requirement. We have financial training out there for that to happen. We have music and art, foreign language, national standards. The set post-secondary institutions are wanting to require 4 years of math for every child in Minnesota. And we really only have 7 elective credits to work with. And as we pare those down and pare those back, we limit the options kids and parents can make in their high school years to really take those things they love. And I just caution you as you go forward, as that number gets smaller and smaller, there's really going to be effect in how kids are engaged at the local level. I also wanted to share with you, we have asked the Department of Finance to perform a local fiscal impact note for this bill. It's a way that it goes out to business managers across the state of Minnesota and asks for what implementation at the local level, not what the fiscal note you have shows, but what the local cost would be. And it's just another way of providing information with you on that. And it will go to taxes is the only way that we did it through the tax committee. It'll go back up there, but we'll bring it to you as soon as we have it so you can get an idea about the local costs school districts have to face when you're providing new curriculum and staff development. So we just would appreciate your thoughtfulness on all these issues going to get forward, Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Schwab, I just want to go back to the this comments from Illini Hospitals and Clinics, where they say by 2020, the cost of treating obesity or an obese person will be 61% higher than someone in who's, you know, actually a healthy weight. And 45% of all adults will be obese. Now, I know there's different ways of, I think the clinical way of measuring obesity sometimes probably puts all of us in that category. But I think what they're getting at is that, I mean, we've got almost like an epidemic on our hands. That's not even, I mean, half of the population by 2020, adult population. I think that's significant enough where we have a responsibility to try to do something. And I can still remember the university giving us I was at a discussion where they talked about the cost of health care out a number of years and how you could lower that cost of health care. And it all hinged around what we ate and the staying healthy. I mean, the choices we made before we got to start using those healthcare services. And so I think this is in a little bit different category than foreign languages and outdoor education. I like those courses too, but I think this one kind of gets right at the physical fitness of our nation. And I really do think we need to have some kind of a response to it. And I know health education is important. There's many components to this, but I do think we have a responsibility to do something. Ms. Schwab?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'd like to be part of the solution. I mean, it really is a community-wide problem, and I think K-12 has a partnership relationship. But we found more often than not that just because we hold the children, we oftentimes are asked to provide those services. We don't receive a lot of money from the health committee to perform these services. So if that's a wish of the House and the Senate to take us that way, we need to be supported so we can provide it so we're not taking it out of some other fund to do it. And you know how precarious school districts are perched around the state. So,
right. Senator Salzman?
You know, briefly, I think, Mr. Chair, it all goes back to a funding issue again because, you know, our school days are shorter, so sometimes kids are going home earlier and sitting in front of a television or playing video games, or we've, you know, reduced the number of after-school programs. Athletic programs are going up in cost. I've heard about $300 per sports in some areas, and so it's harder for kids to participate. So I think along with this is definitely a funding issue, and I think that's my point was, if we had time in the day, as we've shortened our school days, something had to give. And we also talk about the achievement gap and the impact on our society. So I think if we look at this in a broader view and not just say we're going to fix this in our schools, absolutely, and that maybe I know there's been a lot of work on this, and I appreciate that. So it's how do we do it, and what's the impact to everything else?
Senator Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been kind of struggling whether I wanted to say anything or not, but I guess kind of piggybacking off of what Senator Saltzman just said, this is an area that I just feel so broadly, strongly, personally about, but it does, frankly, kind of go back to what Senator Wieger was talking about in terms of parental obligations, as well as what's happening from early on. And, you know, every family is different, which is partially why we do things at schools. But I was thinking, Senator Anderson, about what you were talking about with, because I, too, had two, we called them bungee boys, who desperately needed to get the wiggles out of them. And also they needed that physical activity. They needed to get that oxygen in them, and I can say that taking away recess was never a good idea for them. But I also think as we're thinking creatively and using Minnesota ingenuity, perhaps as we're moving forward in this whole dialogue, is thinking, you know, again, locally we've got this great partnership going on, but thinking about how creatively we can get there. Because one of the concerns I actually have on the high school level is half a credit, I'm going to do it, kind of, I'm going to say both sides of this. A half a credit in 4 years, so what? They're going to, frankly, they're not more physically active every year. That ain't getting us anywhere. It's not going to teach them what we need. And we want them to integrate it. And, you know, we had a requirement in our household that you needed to do two things all the way through. One was be involved in some type of arts activity, whether that was music or ceramics or something. Could be in school or out of school. And one was you needed to be physically active. And one of the schools that one of our kids went to had a requirement about being involved in physical activity. As they got older, on the low end, it was two of the three parts of the year. It could have been within school. It could have been outside of school. They offered, for lack of a better term, intramural walking and biking, which was supervised, kind of checking in. And that was outside of school for the most part, because they also were really thinking about the balance on the other end that we've been talking about, which is if you're trying to get to college and if you're trying to get to a competitive college, then you also, frankly, have to, now I'll argue the other side, which is worry about grade points. And we also need to be making sure that if we're doing this, we're doing it probably on a credit as opposed to a grade basis, because this brings down people's grades. I hate to say it. You can get an A in Phi Ed, and it brings down your grade point average. So we have to be creative as we're moving forward. And I think that what the bill is trying to get at is really very good. What I would wonder, though, is as even with what current law is, can we have the department working more closely with the different groups and with parents to be figuring out how do we really integrate this as we're moving on? And then we have to think about what the costs are. And frankly, time is the problem. So I'm not entirely personally sure that I think we all know there's a problem and we all want to figure out how to fix it. And I'm not sure we're quite there yet. So I guess I don't know that helps at all, but I the work that you all are doing is critically important. And I want to make sure I'm valuing that. But again, half credit in 4 years is probably not what our real goal is. Our real goal is those kids are physically active all year round.
Hey, members, we do have to move on. In the bill, it actually, on page 3, in the amendment, I guess, now it's the bill, page 3, lines 3.16, there's a directive there that the commissioner in 2018-2019 school year must revise and align the state standards. Is that, I'm just curious as to why that date is so far out. And I realize that I think there's a cycle as to the review of the standards, and maybe that's where it fits in. But,
Mr. Chair, yes. That was recommended to us by Senate Council to move that date out, as I remember. And my understanding is that would be the time frame for the review of these standards in, into the future.
Senator Council.
Mr. Chair, members, that's putting the physical education statewide standards as part of the review cycle that's been set up for all the other academic standards.
Did you see these dates?
So it's not putting out the start of the current or the would be the new physical education standards. It would be setting a review for the new physical education standards.
Right. Okay. Any other questions? We need to take action.
Mr. Chair.
I want to bring your attention back to the fiscal note, and on page 3 of 4 of the fiscal note. Mr. Nauman, if you could just go through there and update the committee on what the actual cost of this bill is or the changes that have occurred as a result of the amendment that was adopted.
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking, and I should hasten to add to members that, number one, this is a fiscal note from last year's bill. And based on those costs, it does, the grants have been removed, so that $2 million cost presumably is gone. It has been suggested, and I think we would need a confirmation from the department on this, that the MDE's staff is gone and that the web design, if not gone, is reduced. It does look like we are left, the rulemaking still remains, and that's a little that's high for a rulemaking. We've carried for non-controversial rulemaking. We've carried substantially smaller numbers in years past, and so I think that we would need to request a new note to make sure that we get the numbers visited with the department as well as the Department of Finance about this. And I think we're going to request that on the amendment this afternoon.
All right, very good. So, members, you have kind of an update, rough update as to the fiscal note. Right. Senator Wergen.
Mr. Chair, I know you're trying to move on, but I really want to take a moment, if I can, first of all, to thank Senator Wigger. Where are we going to draw the line at where the parents are the parents instead of the school being the parents and government being the parents? You know, it's probably pretty hard to believe, but once upon a time I was so thin I was called names for being thin. Now, I know that's really tough to believe at this point in my life, but it's true. Not everybody in this world is going to be a Barbie or a Ken. Those dolls they wouldn't be able to stand up in real life shape like that. And it just seems like we're just pressuring people. We're pressuring little girls into anorexia or teenage girls into anorexia. We're so focused on this. And, folks, you know, I'm overweight. I fit that obese category really well, but I'm not a huge drain on the system. And look around this room. We're not perfect. We're not going to be perfect. You know, we can go too far, too. We can push little girls into anorexia and stuff like that. I really believe that. And I think we're focusing so highly on this one thing. And really, schools have got a lot more to deal with than this. And you know, I remember hating polka in high school. I'm sorry, but I just hope we can sit back and think a little bit about what we're pushing people into and how we're assuming that all of us that are overweight are such a huge drain on the system. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I've consistently said I'm not overweight. I have thick skin. I've been here too long. I like that approach. But I think that I understand what people are saying when they think this starts at home. Certainly it does. And so does breakfast. And so do a whole lot of other things. And sex education, et cetera. All of those things would be best handled at home. But a few decades ago, parents stopped doing that. And now parents are sedentary. And their children certainly are. I mean, they may be walking, but they're, you know, instant messaging and, or should I say IMing, and whatever, you know, and listening to music and doing all of that at the same time. And I told the story, I saw three kids going to school the other day, and two of them were instant messaging, and one was listening to music. And I'm convinced the two girls were IMing each other, and there they were, pretty much together on the street by my house. So people are not getting out and away from the video games, and you know, maybe the Wii guitar games or whatever they are getting some people some kind of aerobic exercise. But we really, as a nation, need more physical activity. And then you add to that the fact that a lot of the extracurricular and after-school activities are missing, and kids aren't participating in sports. So I would like us to make, you know, I think it's not much of a, you're not asking for much, I think, Senator Tomasoni, but I support it, that at a minimum. I mean, I think it should be more. And we need to do something to get society back on its feet and moving. So, Mr. Chairman, did Senator Tomasoni want this amendment? Or is this this is the delete time. Everything. Did you?
We adopted the amendment.
Oh, okay.
Senator, the next motion would be to act on the amendment. I don't think there is any amendment. Senator Romo?
Mr. Chair and members, I think I would like to pick up where Senator Clark left off. We're at a conundrum. We have so much required of our schools, and we have shrunk the size of the school day that to a point that our students are all going to be regimented in one direction. I think we're coming close to a time when we have to rethink how we do school. And one of the models that we talked about is the Massachusetts model, where they combine not only the high rigor and the expectations of their teachers, but they included the community. We invest a great deal of our state dollars in bike trails and all kinds of things to get people outdoors and to get them to exercise. And this, to me, would be a perfect ripe place to engage our community in some community-wide initiatives, maybe linked with the school, but based on developing and using those assets we've already paid for to get not only our children, but to get our adults out there and doing what they need to do to stay healthy. I just, as little as some people think one half credit is, I think we need a lifetime and a awareness of the assets we've already developed to keep ourselves healthy. And for me, the perfect venue for this type of task should be the community, maybe in partnership with the schools. But
yes, if you would like to respond.
Yeah, just one very quick comment about involving the community in this discussion. Absolutely, the American Heart Association, the groups that we are working with on this issue, agree wholeheartedly that this is a community-wide issue and should be addressed broadly at the community level. In fact, we had a seat on Senator Torres Ray's Public Health Working Group for the Healthcare Access Commission, where one of our recommendations moving forward was to promote this statewide health improvement plan. And that's exactly what that plan would do, is to create community-based strategies to partner schools with businesses, with local public health, with, you know, all the stakeholders at the local community to promote that kind of community-based approach. However, we do need to have a basic level in the schools of physical education, and so that's why we're supportive of all of those strategies. Thank you.
Okay, members, are we ready to, Senator Tomasoni?
Yeah, I don't know if you're ready to vote. I think you are, but Senator Bergen, I don't look as good as I did one time either. But the obesity factor in Minnesota alone in 2003 cost the state $1.3 billion. And it's pretty interesting that Minnesota is only one of three states in the country that doesn't have a statewide curriculum standard for physical education. And when oftentimes we do things around here based on what people in Minnesota think, and 88% of Minnesotans think that we need a physical education in our schools daily. This isn't going to do a daily physical education requirement, but Quite frankly, it would really be a good idea if we could ever figure out how to do that, because it would actually be a good thing for people. But this is a small step, and I know a real lot of schools are doing physical education already. This is making sure they keep doing it. And I think most schools probably won't have to adjust much to this at all. So I'm hoping the committee will move this forward.
Okay. Senator Wicker.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move it for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, if that would be okay. The appropriate. Then I have a suggestion after that.
Right. Senator Wicker moves that the A1 amendment, which is now the bill before us, Senate file 382 A1, and I believe there were no amendments, be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus education bill. We will be asking for a new updated fiscal note on that, and so members will see this again. On that motion, any discussion? If not, Senator Wicker.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I want to thank Senator Tomasoni and the testifiers. This is clearly a huge problem in our state and our country, and hopefully comments that may not have been construed as support weren't interpreted as not being aware that there's a problem. And I would suggest that perhaps, as we do in other areas, maybe a work group of some of those that would like to discuss some additional suggestions, if you wanted to appoint that. We're going to be hearing a couple of bills today in policy, which you'll be a part of. But ultimately, a lot of these ideas converge in a conference committee, and I would be willing, and perhaps a few others would like to serve on a work group that could look at some of additional options to address the policy goal that Senator Tomasoni is advancing.
Okay. On Senator Wicker's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The same motion?
No.
No.
Same sound. Motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Tomasoni, and those that testified. Members, we're going to make a slight adjustment because we don't feel that we'll be able to get at the governor's budget, so we're going to move that to tomorrow. But we're going to ask Mr. Nauman to go over the spreadsheet, which you have in your packet, and that's reflecting the governor's proposed changes. And members, the spreadsheet that Mr. Nauman will go over looks like that. And then tomorrow we will go over the governor's budget in greater detail and talk about some of the initiatives that he's proposing. Mr. Nauman.
Okay, so Mr. Chair and members, I thought I would just quickly go through the... Mr. Chair and members, the spreadsheet, as the chair referenced, I'm just going to go through the spending very quickly so that we can dispense with this conversation and we don't have to do it tomorrow. So beginning on line 10, we're, and I'm working down, I should orient you all the way across because you haven't seen these numbers yet. The February forecast numbers are the first two columns for fiscal year 8 and 9 with differences relative to November. Then February forecast for 10 and 11, also differences. Then the governor's recommendations for 8 and 9 and with differences relative to the forecast February, then governor's recommendations for 10 and 11, and also differences relative to the February forecast. Members will note that there's an asterisk after the governor's recommendation because tomorrow you're going to be asked to load an author's amendment to conform the bill that was introduced with the actual governor's recommendation. So this is a bit unconventional. Normally we would not assume an amendment until it actually goes on, but given that this is the governor's recommendation, we thought it was appropriate to reference what the governor is actually recommending. So that's what the footnote references, and in most cases, it's just moving a few dollars around. So, members, on line 10, there is some language in the tax part of the governor's recommendation that affects some aids and levy splits in the tails. So there's this is a utility transition aid. It changes the tax base, and so that's going to spend a little bit more aid and reduce a so that's the purpose behind that proposition. Then on line 11, the bill that you will see tomorrow has an initiative on reciprocity with adjoining states, and that language carries some levy and aid impacts on transition revenue, so there's some final money paid there. Back in 2002, when we did the original K-12 shifts with the last deficit, we allowed school districts that were in statutory operating debt to get some advanced final payments, essentially get paid on a 97-3 basis instead of, so we were sending if you were an SOD, we sent you one direction. If you were a district that was not an SOD, we eventually took you down to 80-20. That position was never reversed, and so I think the department's going to speak in more detail to that, but the governor reverses that position. It carries a one-time savings of $6.1 million. online, and I should...
I'm sorry. Yeah, Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nauman, I lost where you're at on that last comment.
My apologies. That was line 12.
Thank you.
It's called advanced final payment. Mr. Chairman and members, on line 27, there's some additional aid put into the Rushford-Peterson School District. This is aid that is that carries, interestingly, carry-forward language from across biennia. It's a bit unusual, but the money essentially is money that we're canceling from other parts of the flood bill that you passed in special session that is, in a sense, extra. Rushford-Peterson had a greater need, so that money is going in there. Essentially, it allows them to take $158,000 that's attributable to 1 year, and then they'll carry the balance over into the next year. So it essentially gives them 3 years of funding. And that's this is language that the amendment affects, or spending, rather. I think that concludes that page. Flipping to the second page, the governor's bill includes a series of spending items, the first being on line 69, the Math and Science Teacher Centers and Institute, $2.45 million is included there. And when you see the bill will appropriate 2.7, but there is rider language of $250,000 each year. So we are showing that as a department expenditure because it's administrative money. So that conforms with the traditional budget rules, and there's two occasions where that happens. Mr. Chair, then on line 71, the Minnesota Virtual Education Program, you receive $1 million. Minnesota Teach Online, 72. The appropriation is for $250,000 to develop this program in fiscal year 09, but again, that's administrative money, so it shows up in the department appropriation, which we will display later on. You Teach on line 73, $250,000 with a tail. Principals Leadership Institute, this is an initiative that has been in years past part of the best practices program. It's reinstituted under the governor's recommendation, $400,000. So the Education Excellence Program is up $4.1 million under the governor's recommendation. Skipping down to line 99, the Rushford-Peterson facilities money, which was appropriated during the special session, is reduced by $130,000. This is unnecessary money. And so this is the money that's being moved from one pot to the other. We saw the ad earlier. So line 99 is the beginning of the subtraction. Then the money for Mabel Canton and Houston is repealed into the language of the bill, and the disaster facilities grants is reduced from $90,000 to $14,000. So all of that money is the component pieces that we're adding back into Rushford-Peterson that the governor recommended. And then finally, Mr. Chair, I think we can skip down to the department. This is the smallest governor's K-12 bill in my memory. The on line 168, rider language in the department appropriation reduces the Board of Teaching allocation by $25,000. The Board of Administrators allocation reduced by $7,000. Then on lines 178 and 179 is the administrative money for those programs that I spoke of earlier. So the department will be increased by $250,000 with a tail for $250,000 each year. And then a general operating budget recommendation of $860,000. So the department budget comes down by, when you make all these adjustments, by about 1.7%, a reduction of about $392,000. The total reduction to the K-12 accounts is about $2.392 million, and that's on line 203. So, Mr. Chairman, that was a quick fire hose. The balance pages include the levy tracking. There's at this point, I believe there's only one item of note, and that relates to the reciprocity initiative. There's an $83,000 impact as a result of that proposal, and I'm sure the department will go into this in greater detail tomorrow.
Okay. So, members, that kind of gives you an overview of the spreadsheet for the governor's bill. Is Senator Dahl here? There he is. So we'll take legislation, your bill. And the reason we're asking to move the governor's proposal to tomorrow is because we're not going to have enough time to really, you know, ask questions and give the commissioner the opportunity to present the governor's proposal. So, right, Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. You know, I was listening to the testimony on the health issues and the obesity issues. I think maybe the stuff that I have to present here might go hand in hand. We're looking at the arts, and I'm thinking maybe a little more marching band and dance classes will help integrate to help us keep our weight down. So,
not the polka.
I know it's a little tough classes, but anyway, what Senate File 2051 does is, in an effort to maintain kind of a well-rounded educational experience for our students, and especially in light of the federally mandated testing focus we have, there's a deep and growing concern that the arts is going to become an afterthought. And I think we all acknowledge the value of arts in the education experience. And when we see districts diverting more and more resources towards including teachers and the time amount of time students participate in each of the subjects, we got a limited number of academic areas that are being highlighted at the expense of others. So this is an attempt to keep the arts from losing even further significance. This legislation does not adopt a particular assessment, but it does require that districts report to parents, their community, and the Minnesota Department of Education what they're doing. I brought a few testifiers to kind of highlight, you know, what their concerns are and how they think we best address it. And I'd like to start off, if I may, Mr. Chair, with Paul Kyle.
Thank you, Senator Dahl. And go ahead, please give your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Paul Kyle, and I am a music educator in the Edina Public Schools, specifically a band director, and a member of the Arts Education Consortium of Minnesota. AECM was founded 3 years ago by all of the associations that represent arts education in Minnesota, including the visual arts, media, creative writing, dance, theater, and music. The group represents nearly 5,000 arts educators and the educational interests of every student in the state and has been meeting monthly with the goal of advocating for arts education with a unified voice. Accountability has become the most significant issue in the field of education, and we are well aware of the impact it has had upon the lives of students in our schools. The arts, by state law, are a required component of a high school diploma in Minnesota, and we are grateful for the state's recognition of the importance of the arts in the education of our students, communities, and the state. Minnesota arts education programs are the envy of many other states, and we aim to maintain that status. However, even with that element in place, arts education programs are being reduced and eliminated to find additional time for test preparation. With that in mind, AECM placed accountability at the top of its platform of issues. Specifically, AECM desires the state to hold school districts accountable to meeting all of the academic standards that are required by state law, including those in the arts. Currently, districts indicate compliance in non-tested areas by simply placing a check mark on the state's accountability report. Districts are not required to provide anything else. We believe this to be inadequate. The language of the proposal simply asks that the state school districts report evidence of student achievement for all academic standards that are not subject to state tests. It is hoped that the proposal will require districts to take arts education as well as the other non-tested academic subjects more seriously and to demonstrate the importance of these subjects as part of a well-rounded curriculum. In considering accountability for every aspect of education, you may be asking, how can we make this happen? What will this look like, and how much will it cost? The answer to the how question is actually easier than it sounds. If this proposal becomes law, arts educators and those in other non-tested areas would provide their districts with data and information that presents a clear picture of how students are meeting the state's standards. You will note the broad nature of the proposal's language. The intention is to allow educators to choose the assessments and means of reporting that best fit the needs of their students. Please let me emphasize that we are not asking that another set of tests be required or given. Arts educators have considered the answer to the what question for years. While many consider the arts to be a subjective content area, our state's arts educators and the state's Arts Quality Teaching Network, led by the Purpich Center for Arts Education, have been blending the subjective and the objective aspects of an arts education with great success. We are well prepared to help the state, school district leadership, and arts educators review and consider what will best indicate and support strong evidence of learning in the arts. And when it comes to cost, we believe there to be little to no cost impact to the district, as we are drawing from information and data that should already exist and be available in the districts. Each school district will decide the extent to which students are learning in the arts and the degree to which statewide standards are being met. As a music educator for 11 years, I can assure you this proposal does not mean more work for teachers. The reality is that good arts educators are already doing this as a matter of regular practice. We can tell you and explain the progress of each student in our schools right now. The problem is that no one is asking for that information. In a moment, you'll meet a couple of educators who will share their experiences in this area. Finally, I would add that where we find good arts education in our state, you will find a high-achieving school. And where you'll find a high-achieving school, you'll find a very strong school district. And a state with strong school districts will continue to rank among the best in the country and the world. We feel that this proposal will help meet this goal. But even more important than that, it will ensure that our state will be providing the high-quality education that our students truly deserve and will have the evidence to prove it to you. This bill has already passed both the Education Policy Committees in the House and Senate, as well as the Education Finance Committee in the House, and now we are asking for your support of Senate File 2051 to hold school districts accountable to the required state standards and to assure that children of Minnesota receive the education that they deserve. Following the presentation of my colleague, we'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Kyle. If you would give your name for the record.
Gary Averick.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good
morning, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. My name is Terry Akervik. I'm a music educator in Duluth at Lincoln Park K-8 school. I work with the 3rd through 6th grade general music classes and also 6th through 8th grade choirs. Part of my time is I serve as the curriculum music specialist for Duluth. I am also a parent, and I recently completed committee work with the Commissioner of Education on the State Arts Review for the standards. I want to talk to you a little bit about the work that we've done in Duluth. We're working as a pilot project, actually, with our elementary music teachers. We are the first in the state to look at aligning the standards with common assessments for the elementary music. outcomes and benchmarks and aligning the state standards with our district goals and benchmarks. This process started in the fall of 2006, but even earlier. I think from the beginning of my career as a teacher, 19 years in this state, we have always looked at, as educators, we are always assessing students. It's ongoing, minute to minute, every day in our classes, what we are doing as teachers and what the students are learning and how we can improve the student learning. It started with our curriculum review cycle, as I heard one of the centers talk about before. It's usually a 6 to 7 year process in Duluth. We talk about improving students' learning and their mastery of skills and the what, the how, and the why we are doing this work. We look at specifically our training that we have in staff development. You know, what are the best practice teaching strategies for teaching, but also for students' learning, but also adults' learning. How do they learn better? How can we improve the teaching? We have an expectation and a requirement by our administrators in Duluth for the collection of data, and you'll see an outline from our assistant superintendent, Dr. Joe Hill. There's a letter for you today, Chair and members of the committee. As I said before, we talked about aligning the state standards and with our district goals. We also look at what can we do as teachers to help this process be more effective and efficient. It's not about doing more. It's not about spending more. It's about what we are doing now to be more effective and efficient with our time and with the students and what they're learning. What should the data look like? That's been a part of this process as we work through this pilot. What can be done in music and also in art? We are starting our art teachers looking at this process of common assessments. The Duluth teachers, as I said, are a model, and the work we are doing is being shared across the state. Bemidji is also looking at this as a project for K-12 in their music education. Why are we doing this? Again, it's really what is best for the kids. It's student-centered. It's already what's being assessed. As someone stated earlier, we have report cards. We assess the students both informally and formally, almost on a daily basis, to see what we can do as teachers. I think that's it for now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And if you would like to give your name for the record, please.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can people hear me?
Yep. No, yes.
On. Yes, my name is Colleen Callahan. I teach dance at Southwest High School in Minneapolis. Though Paul and I are in rival schools, blocks away from each other, one thing we agree on is rigorous arts education. And I think it's really interesting to me to see that the arts, who used to be sort of, when I was in college 25, 30 years ago, something that had to be proved to stay inside a school, now are really holding their heads high in terms of what kinds of assessment standards we have. I believe that's an interesting thing. My background is I graduated in dance education from Brigham Young University in 1979. When I started teaching, I was 6 years older than my oldest students. Now I'm 32 years older than my oldest students. I feel like I've seen a lot. And the first 15 years of my teaching were at North High School in Minneapolis. I cut my teeth on a really rough group of kids, with parents that weren't always there and weren't always advocates like you all sound like you are for your children, and probably didn't care that they had 4 years of science and math, which, to be honest, I don't either. And many things are bamboozling us about that, I believe. I now teach very high-level students with some mix of other students that are not having the advantages of the Ivy League school parents that I also teach now. One thing we know for sure, the arts, and I'm going to say physical education too, create community in a school. We can't measure a lot of things. One of the things we can't measure is how many students are alive. I hope I don't get too choked up about this. Are not shooting other children. Are finding a place in a community at a school where they are feeling ostracized in other academic classes because maybe they don't measure up. We can't measure what the arts do in that effective way, but what we can measure is easy. It's taken us a lot of years, maybe 15, 20 years, when our first Goals 2000 meeting in Annapolis, Maryland was, where we developed the standards. and found out that over this long period of time, especially in Quality Teacher Network through the Purpose Center, I'm a believer in that, is we've come up with assessments that really can be measured. And that kind of thing, to me, I'm embarrassed if there's an arts teacher in the district, in my district, anywhere probably in the state, that can't figure that out. So to me, that's not the big problem. I think I also serve for the board or for the Department of Ed as a reviewer for colleges to look at their curriculum to be dance and theater certified. I also look at portfolios of new candidates for licenses in dance and theater. The evidence they have to provide in order to be approved is really rigorous and based on the standards. And why we as arts teachers aren't held to that same standard, I don't know. Because the people that are doing well in schools in the arts are people that are using standards. And I don't say standards like they're something that came from above. We develop these as educators and with the community. This is part and parcel of what we knew as artists in the field. It's not divorced from what we do regularly. So I want to just find some congruency in this. Why am I looking at colleges and trying to decide if they're meeting standards and putting them in the met or not met category? Most are doing really well and sending out amazing student teachers because of that. And why am I looking at candidates for dance and theater licenses? And my own district doesn't really care if I meet any standards. They can put a little check in the box and say, yes, we offer these many arts areas, and maybe they're lying and maybe they're not. So to me, it's a natural evolution of arts educators that say we want quality, and this to me is how we get it.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Dahl, and your testifiers. Just a question. I'm reading some of the material, and their testimony is that you're not asking for any testing. This one document that was submitted says it does not propose another test or tests, allows districts to determine how best to gather and report the evidence. And I'm just wondering, what kind of assessments are we talking about? The testimony is that this isn't going to take any additional time or any additional effort or any additional money, but there's going to be some assessment. And so I'm just wondering, what kind of an assessment is that wouldn't require anything to happen that isn't already happening, and how would that work? I'm a little confused.
It's not that there's not testing happening. The reality is that there's no evidence of what's going on. We as music educators are constantly evaluating our students. Some of us are gathering evidence through portfolios. Some of us gather it through sound files. And so in our programs, the testing and the accountability and the evidence is there, but we're not being asked to provide it. And so this would hopefully give us an opportunity to provide and put forth that evidence and help hold districts accountable for maintaining strong arts programs.
And Mr. Senator Chairman Hamm. And Mr. Kyle, and I appreciate that, and I think that those kinds of things are very valuable for individual students or families to look at what their student is doing. But if you're talking about compiling for a district the portfolios of all the different students and making a report of that and making that accessible, how does that get done? What is the work, or how do you take those 200 different portfolios and condense it down to one sort of district assessment of art or music, or how do you do that?
You know, I would like to ask Mr. Mike Hyatt to address, or Ms. Akrovic to address that, because they have been pretty instrumental in that, and every district is a little bit different in how it compiles their information.
Mr. Chair?
Terry
Akrovic.
Akrovic.
Yes,
okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator, the work that we've done, as I said, have been going on for many, many years in Duluth. And what we have done in the past few years is our administrators have been asking for data, collection of data, not just in music, but also in art and PE. And speaking to the last bill, we have data to show the improvement of students in their physical fitness. We have pre- and post-tests. And what we're looking for is the expectation at the state level that we show that. The common assessments that we are doing, it is to collect data informally. There's many ways to do that. It's paper and pencil test. As we said, it could be video or audio file, but it's collecting samples of work, setting it against rubrics. students that might not meet the standard at a zero or a minimal level, examples at the medium level, and then also examples at the high level. But we also collect the data and showing it through report cards or our grade books, and then just keeping samples of that data. Because realistically, it's difficult to keep 400 students' portfolios. That's not real for a teacher to do, because where would we do that? We have teachers in Duluth right now who still have data and files in their garages at home from the grad standards. You know, we kept the data because we were expected to do that, but then it's not realistic for us to keep doing that. But the sample work, I think we've done, and the work with the Purpose Center, they've helped us facilitating us through that process of the sample work and collecting.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Ms. Akrovic. And I guess I'm just, because of the nature of the different arts areas, and I do understand their value, and I've got four kids, and our oldest was a very artistically inclined in lots of different ways. But I'm also coming from a school board, and I'm thinking, if I'm on the school board and I'm trying to produce this report that's going to somehow capture this, it's not quite clear to me how we do that. And what I'm fearful of is that what we'll do is we'll say, we'll put this out there, and then school districts will say, well, we're going to have to give a paper pencil test to all our students to show, find something that we can relatively easily quantify, because we're going to have to report it electronically probably, or put something out in the paper. And how do you boil all that down into something that is objective or relatively meaningful, that isn't just, here's an example of a drawing, or here's an example of, I mean, other than that. So I'm...
Ms. Callahan?
I could do that right now with just percentages. I could say my beginning and intermediate class are working on these particular benchmarks in the standard, and of that group of kids, 25 in one class, 35 in another, this percentage of kid has met the standard at this level. It's a piece of paper I could hand to my principal, and he could say, thanks, email it off to the guy at... or the woman at the district. To me, it's sort of a no-brainer that way.
Mr. Chair, we have one other testifier by Mike.
Okay.
Address this. Mike Hyatt from the Perfect Center might have another little perspective to help.
Okay, please give your name for the record.
My name is Mike Hyatt. I'm the Director of Professional Development and Research at the Perfect Center, and I, too, am a lifetime arts and music educator in the state of Minnesota. And Senator Hahn, to address your questions, our goal in this legislation, the Purpose Center has very closely worked with this, is to deal with the issues of practicality as well. And our goal was to, and I believe Paul Kyle mentioned this, the ideal of samplings from a classroom. We're not expecting that a school district would produce evidence for every child in the program, but a good cross-section of evidence that... And our work at the Purpose Center with schools such as Duluth and Bemidji and many, many others has been developing a process by where we make more than just simply put the work of art or the recording on the table, but we have deep discussions with teachers, and there's documentation, and there's a great deal of work being done in such things as rubrics that would give us a very solid sense of consistency between districts as to what that artwork represents. And we've been working very closely with teachers to make sense of, so what does that artwork really tell us in direct relation to the standards? So our goal in this bill would be to have some uniform consistency from districts, that they would be sharing data that could be rubric scores, that could be consistent, hopefully consistent across districts, that would speak to the standards that work of art reference. So that's our goal. It's a sampling, and it's related to the standards very directly.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your input. I almost hate to mention the word, but I remember back when I first was elected to the school board, we were dealing with the profile of learning, and we were talking about assessments, and in many ways this sort of sounds like the kinds of assessment that people were trying to put together when we had the profile. And I remember when I first was on the board meeting with our assessment coordinator, and she was trying to explain to us how we were going to do this, and we were going to create these models and standards, and then we're going to have collaborative meetings with other districts and compare our models to their models and see if we can find what the and as it kind of went on, it became more and more murky and less clear what we were evaluating or how clear it was. And I'm not suggesting at all that we shouldn't be pay attention to this whole section of the curriculum. I'm just struggling with the requirement to do this reporting and how that is going to be done in a meaningful way that is going to be doable by a district that already has lots of things on its table, and we know we don't want to do any more testing. We've heard a lot about that. And Senator Dahl, maybe just is the School Board Association involved in this, and how do they, have they given any input on what their take is on this, and are they supportive of adding this requirement to, into the?
Senator Hahn, I believe they're going to be testifying to it, so we can hear firsthand.
But maybe my question, Mr. Chairman, is simply, is this a different approach than that profile of learning approach, or is it just, is it kind of trying to do that in a way to create a model for assessment based on that portfolio and performance?
Senator Dahl, are you bringing back the profiles of learning? Mr. Hyde.
Mr. Chair and Senator Hahn, no, we are not bringing back the profile, but I would tell you that in the area of performance assessment and formative assessment, a great deal of work has gone on over the last decade since we kind of parted waters in that direction. And I would tell you that the work we're doing now, not only in arts classrooms, but in classrooms across the board, we know a great deal more now about bringing in formative assessment and classroom assessment as an accompaniment to the testing that's going on. Discussions and meetings that I've attended, not only at the state level, but at the national level, is that in, as we move forward in No Child Left Behind and the reauthorization of that, I believe we're going to see a much more expanded or a diverse analysis of what students are doing and not strictly relying on the tests. Yes, we are looking at, and I think, and I don't apologize for this at all, we are absolutely looking at the work in the classroom because I think that's one of the most important things that we can bring forward to really show student achievement. Yes, we're looking at student work in the classroom, and we're working really closely with teachers to get rid of that murkiness and to get more clarity and definition. And compared to where we were 10 years ago, I believe we're much, much further down the road. And as evidenced by, for example, what's going on in Duluth, I never thought I would see the day when I could put 10 elementary music teachers in the room and have them agree on anything. And we are now seeing that, even to the point where they're agreeing on what those common assessments are, what it is that really tells us that students have met the standards. I've been the chair and the administrator, excuse me, the kind of the administrator supervising the art standards review process here where we're revising the standards. And as we went out across Minnesota in public hearings, time after time in virtually every city that we were in, not only arts educators, but community members and school administrators told us these are good standards, but they don't have any teeth. And that was the absolute word time after time. The good standards without accountability that go with them absolutely tell us nothing. So our whole point here is, yes, we're looking at student work in the classroom, and we're working very hard to give it clarity and so that everyone can have a reasonable understanding of what we're talking about. So that would be my response.
Ms. Akrovic, you may have to dust off those boxes in your garage.
Well, Mr. Chair, I lived through OBE and grad standards, and the murkiness is going away, and it's really good work that we are doing, and it's student-centered, which is the most important. What is best for the students in their mastery of these skills in all arts areas, not just music, but art and PE and dance included in that?
We have Senator Salzman and then Senator Schein.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. You know, my children, I think I mentioned, have been in orchestra, and I always look at art as something as differently, that it's an opportunity, it's a personal experience, and I think to Senator Hahn's point of how do you evaluate that, and that just like FIAD, we think we talked earlier about, you know, this concern of I'm not going to get a good grade, I don't want to do it. Well, people are different in their gifts in art. And the example, I think we had a bill similar to this last year, is that when my son was in the Stillwater Orchestra, our conductor, Mr. Hanlon, would push them, and they played pieces of music that a high school orchestra should have never played. And it wasn't perfect. But, you know, so if they had evaluated, if they had taken that, you know, this particular piece to the State High School League, they wouldn't have been graded very well. But they got more out of that piece in the experience. And how do you evaluate that? So I think I look at this a description of student achievement, and certainly there's a piece of that, but it's opportunity. What kind of opportunities are we giving children? because I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to instill of them the where is art in our society? What does it give to a society? What does it give to life and that personal experience? And achievement and art, just for some reason, it just kind of makes me, I don't think I'm an artist, but I have learned that art is very, very important to me. So if you were to grade me on my achievement, it would be what is my reaction to art, and how do we evaluate that?
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just noticed something that Senator Spalter was talking about, the language here. It may require a one-word
Warhol
here. I know that in the House side, and I think we did this before, that the word description was amended to read evidence of student achievement. And just so I think that you brought that to my attention, I just wanted to remove that.
Senator
Rummel.
I know, but is this on the proposed amendment?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Rummel.
I would strongly move that amendment, Mr. Okay. Chair.
Now we don't, members, we don't have a fiscal note on this, so this will have
amendment.
The amendment that has been suggested is on line 1.12. After 3, delete description and insert evidence. On any discussion, we still have some people who want to testify, so do you want us to take action on this amendment right now? All right, on that motion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion is adopted. Senator Scheid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I maybe it's just intuitive, but I think that a number of things I've seen on things like 60 Minutes and articles I've read showing that the arts, whether it's music or the visual arts, often have made a difference in the lives of students who you might call at risk. And I think that we intuitively know that that's true and possible. I'm not sure. I'd like to see that, and I'm not sure if this does it, that evidence, if you will, looked at. And maybe that's where you're going with this. The other thing I would like to put in a plug for is arts appreciation. I was in, marching band and concert band. Never. I think I had to take an art class in seventh grade. I mean, it was a nightmare, and I really hated art because I wasn't personally good at it. It wasn't until a modern European history class my senior year in college that I had exposure to art as an appreciator rather than a doer, rather than an artist. And I don't think we emphasize that enough. For those of us who are musical, I certainly appreciate all kinds of music, and I've learned about art, but it was kind of almost by accident. I certainly didn't know that Professor Schmidt would show us slides from all over Europe, of works of art and what that would teach me about history. It did, of course, but it was a novel approach to that subject. I would like to see more emphasis then on those of us who are musical learning to appreciate art and vice versa, and those who are artists learning to appreciate music. And I don't know if that's part of the standards that you look at, but I think it's really important, and I never hear anybody really talk about it. If somebody could comment on that.
Okay, we'll get a comment, and then I'd like to ask Ms. Schwab would like to testify from MSBA. So, Ms. Callahan?
Yes, thank you. Actually, I don't mean to be glib about this, but less science and math would help us get the humanities back in the school, too, to have those art appreciation classes. I guess I am glib about it. That's what I mean.
All right. Ms. Schwab, would you like to... Senator Rummel, did you have a question?
In the interest of time, if there's time after this testimony, okay. I have yet one more story to add.
We'll have additional opportunity to ask questions. Ms. Schwab? I'm sorry. Not focused.
She's information.
Yeah. Sorry.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Schneider, and I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And I don't get up here to belittle the value of arts education because it's a very important piece of the school curriculum, and we certainly value it to multiple degrees. I think, it speaks to the bigger issue of where our policies are directed, not only at the state level but the federal level, with the advocacy and the push for more reading, writing, math, science skills. And as a result, we saw today with the FIAD and with the arts programs are feeling a little bit pushed aside, and that's a legitimate concern. So while that's a bigger issue, I think there's no question that arts are important and they offer a great deal of value. I think the piece that we, and we've talked with the folks about this, is that if you look at the bill, I think it not only includes the arts, but it also includes all those locally developed standards. Your health, your FIED, and all those academic areas where there's non-assessments, which would be your social studies. So it's not just the arts program. So it would be an additional piece that districts would have to explore in terms of their assessments on how they would present those in their report card that they send out to their communities and publish in the newspapers. And I think also looking at the bill, if you look at item number 2 under subdivision 5, it talks about the fact that the results of local assessment data can be included in the report card now. And I would argue that discussion, and we saw the local instances with Duluth here today, that they've taken steps to make measurements, develop assessments, lined it up with their vision and mission of the school, and they've created that discussion about reporting those things. And I believe that discussion is something that probably should happen at the local school board level if there's an interest among members that this is a value, this is something that they want to see and demonstrate, then that's a piece that should happen. So another thing is lastly, I should point out, we've heard a little bit of testimony that it would be a uniform and consistent form of measurement, especially specifically to the arts. But at the same time, we talk a little bit about the discretion of the local school district determining what that assessment would look like. And I think that while many districts and many arts educators have taken steps forward here, and I applaud them, and I applaud what the Purpose Center has done in terms of their outreach to help school districts with this, I don't think that would be the case in every school district. So I think it would be something that would be a challenge for some school districts in developing the assessment, the measurement tools, that would have a meaningful impact as they report that to their communities through the report card. I'll conclude my testimony, Mr. Speaker.
Questions? Senator Rummel?
Can we bear with the story first?
Sure.
My son was a double major in computer science and in physics at Boston University, and he took a minor in art. And it wasn't until that he had a decent art class, and it changed the way his brain started to work. So when he minored in art at the university level, I said, how are you going to fit that in? Typical art classes take twice as many hours for the number of credits you get. And he says, Mom, you don't understand. I sit in these physics and these computer science classes all day long. And then when I get to art class, my brain is freed, shifts gears, and all that stuff begins to organize itself in my subconscious. He says, I do better on my tests than anyone else in my class, and I'm the only one that takes art. He wound up at Berkeley Space Sciences Center. Long story short, they launched 5 rockets. They got satellites, one of them halfway to the moon, and they got lost because the antennae somehow weren't quite right. And the guy in charge of the project said, there goes I don't know how many billion dollars. And my son said to him, I can find those rockets or satellites. And they looked at him like he was crazy. He had a picture in his mind of where they were, the art, and he had the mathematics and computer skills
to help. He found every one of them spot on the first try. So I think the arts education is a balance to the way our brains work. And it's wonderful to have a story like that. I think we are, in fact, with the way our whole education policy is going, driving the arts out. And I think that would be a shame. A shame not only because of what we need. We say, I came in today on the driving into work, and somebody talking about the gross domestic product, and the person said, we are what we measure. And if we only measure certain things, we leave out a whole lot. I am sympathetic to the complexity of this, the reporting. But I do think we have to figure out a way where we honor these things that will make us whole persons.
I'd like to just go back to what was brought up in the testimony just a minute ago. And you mentioned this pulls in more than just the arts, but a number of the elective courses. So my question, Senator Dahl, is: was that your intent, or was your intent more to have this be directed toward the arts?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Mr. Kyle answer that.
But. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we did meet with representatives from the state social studies and physical education areas last year when this legislation was first introduced, and they were supportive of the bill under the recognition that many of the things we are already doing in our classrooms and handling at a district level and in some respects with national standards and state standards, we're just asking for the opportunity to provide evidence of the things that are happening in our classrooms.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
The other question I have, and Senator Hanna, I've got you down here, and then this is probably for the department. I'm not sure if somebody here from the department. Do you have an idea how this would fit into the statewide kind of assessment or the statewide reporting system?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michelle Weber, and I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. In order to develop statewide standards around FI-Ed, currently that's developed at the local level. So we would have to go through a standards development process. And that's where the fiscal note had the rulemaking cost to it.
This would be on Senate File 2051. And I guess the question, and I apologize for not having the question narrowed down, but what I understand is that this information would be submitted to the department. Is that correct, Senator Dahl?
That's correct, Mr.
How does the department system pick it up?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it's my understanding that we're currently collecting a report, and so we would add this information in Senator Dahl's bill to the reports that we collect.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Senator Rummel?
Would that be onerous? Would that be very difficult for you?
In reviewing the bill earlier, Mr. Chair, Senator Rummel, it would be an additional component to the reporting. I don't believe a fiscal note or anything's been requested on this, so I'd need to connect with our IT department, but at first read, I'm not sure that it would require a lot of additional work on our part, but I would want to confirm that with folks at the department.
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, I'm just curious if this type, I'm going back to our physical education folks too, if this type of self-reporting evidence of what's going on in the schools, would that also apply to physical education, and would that somewhat deal with the physical education question we had before? Would you be adding all of the required standards? Because right now you only what's assessed are the reading and math.
I think Senator Rummel, I think it would be, it would include the health, physical, the physical education and social studies, I believe, as was mentioned earlier, and it would, and these are local standards, locally developed standards, so they're not statewide standards.
Right.
Okay. All right.
My point, Senator, is simply it might be an easier way for us to add that incentive that all school districts have well thought out local standards and that they do report on them without necessarily adding on that extra course. But that's off the topic, and it's just a curious question that I'd like to follow up on privately.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rummel, if I may respond to that, I do want to, while we haven't assessed or I don't have information about the impact on the department, this clearly would have a local impact in requiring the local school districts to report additional information that they are not currently reporting. So that would be a concern.
Yes.
Senator Hamm.
thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I don't think we should do this. And not because the arts aren't important and the other things that we locally assess aren't important, but we have local school boards that are elected by the same people that elect those of us sitting around this table. And we talk a lot about making sure these local boards have authority and that they have jurisdiction and they have control to do things. And yet every time we're confronted with a question, we say, well, but in this case, we're going to take away their local control and we're going to impose something at the state level. And these kinds of standards, because they are locally developed and apply to report them to the state, for example, is entirely meaningless. You're not going to be able to compare the Eden Prairie standards on art versus the Edina or the Hibbing or anywhere else because they'll be using entirely different criteria. So to have a collection of these performance results from across the state and looking at it at the state level will be a meaningless exercise because there is no set criteria to say what those standards ought to be. We tried to do that with a few subjects, with reading and with math, and because we felt it's important that we have statewide expectations for our students. And I think that's great. We know how difficult that was, and we're still struggling with assessing that. But I just don't believe that doing this is going to enhance the curriculum, is going to enhance the experience of students. It's going to require an additional reporting exercise to be developed by local boards. I don't believe it has much value in terms of contributing to the information of parents and how their students are doing in art or music or these other subject areas. And it's something that currently, if boards want to do this, as I understand what the intent of the bill is, they can do it. There's nothing that prohibits them from developing, reporting, and assessing and giving this information to their parents. And they ought to be doing that if that's what their parents expect and their school districts expect. But we as a state should, I believe, offer our, just restrain ourselves from the desire to be the super school board for the state. We shouldn't be. And these are issues that can be addressed very effectively at the local level. I frankly feel the same way about the FIED bill we talked about earlier, but part of this is just a plea that because we have the power to do these things doesn't mean we should. And we say we have local boards, they're elected. Let's not take all their jurisdiction, all their discretion from them in the interest of doing things that we all believe are good. But let's let the local people discover how to do this. They believe they're good, too. So, Mr. Chairman, it's not really a question, but just sort of a expression, a little frustration. And I hope that we, if we don't pass this, and I would recommend we don't, that it's not taken as a signal that we don't believe in the importance of these things. I just don't believe that as a governmental issue, as a governance issue, that this is the right way to do this. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Senator Hand. The idea here is that with the federal mandates that have been coming down, that the school board is making decisions based a lot on that and with the time and money that's available. And what we're trying to do here is make sure there's a lifeline for these parts of the curriculum. And understandable, it's going to put more stress and there'll be some additional costs involved probably at the school level in the school districts. However, if we don't address this, if we don't put at least have a requirement that they provide some evidence, it's going to be pushed further and further aside as we make these other areas the emphasis, and we'll lose sight of what that overall educational experience is supposed to be for our kids.
And Mr. Chairman and Senator Dahl, and I appreciate that, and I'd be the first one to admit that the federal government has no jurisdiction over education. In fact, we have a bill to repeal ask for the repeal of the No Child Left Behind requirements in Minnesota. But the answer to that isn't more mandates from the state government. We talk about these burdens we've put on local districts by requiring more and more things and constraining their discretion to manage. And the more we do that, the less creativity, the less innovation, it becomes harder and harder for districts to comply with all the expectations that we set. We have some from the federal level, but we have a whole bunch from the state level. And as difficult as it is for the federal government to figure out how to do education in Minnesota, I would say it's difficult for those of us here at this table in St. Paul to be able to determine what goes on in Hibbing or Thief River Falls or Eden Prairie or anywhere else with the degree of precision that we can say our judgment on these issues is better than local school boards. And if we respect this idea of local governance, if we respect that these people are elected with the interests of education and their parents in mind, then we oughtn't to usurp their jurisdiction. If we want to go down this route, then, Mr. Chairman, I would advocate we bring a bill and do away with school boards and just centralize, do like Hawaii has done, make this a state-run system and forget about this whole fiction of local control, because the way we're going, we just keep saying that we here can substitute our judgment for the local boards, and I just don't believe that is good, sound principles on which we ought to base school governance. So I appreciate, Senator Dahl, your concern. I have the same concern. I just don't think that doing this contributes to that. We have to give local people an opportunity to govern their schools. They're capable of it. Let's let them do it and not take that power away from them here at the state level.
Okay. Senator Rummel and then Senator Saxon.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dahl and committee, to a certain extent, I didn't realize how sweeping this change might be. Do we have, as I understand it, we have a place on the state's report card where each individual district can report items of its choice? And if we think that people are using the report card to make some decisions about where they're, it would seem to me if school districts are reporting their work in the arts or their work in social studies or their work in physical ed, that might be the place to begin with this. I'm not sure if you've walked that walk and why you've come to this position.
Senator or Mr. Kyle.
Can you repeat the question, please?
I think, and I'm not positive about this. I think on the state's report card, there's a portion of the report card where each district can self-report things that make that district what it is. And it seems to me that if there are districts that have done this extra work, let's say in the arts, whether it's arts or physical education, things that people care about, is that the place, without taking away, and I agree with Senator Hand, without taking local school board control, if, for example, what's been developed in Duluth becomes considered the best practice, I think parents like myself will be looking for, oh, we've got something like the Duluth model, that maybe this is something that has to bubble up from the ground up. But I don't know much about that local reporting on the report card.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rommel, my understanding is that simply at this point, it's a box that they check to say that, yes, we do indeed have arts. I think what we're looking for is the opportunity to provide the evidence of the things that we're doing. The burden that falls upon the schools is simply to provide the evidence, and the local control still maintains that they can shape how what that evidence is. Certainly in working with the Purpich Center and the evidence in the Duluth schools is that we're looking to continue to refine that alignment and come to a commonality of what we're trying to provide. But at this point, to simply not adopt this would imply that all of the things that are happening in the schools aren't worth reporting or even giving evidence of. And as Mr. Hyatt testified, that the frustration upon the part of some of the non-tested areas is that we're doing terrific things, but there's no teeth. And we're looking for that opportunity to gain that.
Hey, Ms. Schwab, would you like to comment?
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Grace Schwab. I represent the Minnesota School Board.
Please pull a microphone closer. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Grace Schwab. I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I really felt the need to jump up just on that last comment, and not by not referencing this bill, it certainly doesn't say that we don't care about these programs in the school and they're not special. Actually, I think they're sort of hallmarks of who we are as schools, and I do think as we're reevaluating the report card this session, it makes an appropriate thought to say there should be an area to showcase what your school does very well. And I think Senator Rummel had a good point there. I'm, once again, really concerned statewide as we get out into rural Minnesota that this will require significant time and effort by school districts to implement. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Saxon.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate File 2051 as amended and that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. Senator Saxog moves the Senate File 2051 as amended. Members, we do not have a fiscal note that was brought up, and that will be requested from the department. And so with the knowledge of that, we'll be revisiting this. And I think the last point was quite good. And Senator Rummel, I think you're visiting, but you have a bill relating to the report or the report card.
Yes, okay. Yes, Mr. Chair.
So then I think that's coming this way too.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. On Senator Saxog's motion, any further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign?
No.
Motion does prevail.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Dahl. Members, if I could just have you put your the spreadsheet and the supporting documents for the governor's budget back in your folder, then we'll have it tomorrow morning.
Are there others supporting the documents besides the spreadsheet?
There's two other pieces along with the spreadsheet.
Okay. See if I can find them.
That are from the ones, the slides, and
yep. The
committee is adjourned.
Thank you.
Kathy, are you available?
Yes.